Welcome to the Money and Marriage Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Nelson. My mission to empower millennial couples to make money moves that won't just improve your financial health, but strengthen your marriage as well. In this podcast, I share stories, tips, and tricks, both from my experience as a certified financial planner and from my own marriage, to help you and your spouse kick financial anxiety to the curb and use your money to create the lives you love together. Let's get started. All right. So I'm going to do my absolute best to make this an interesting episode about what is objectively not a very interesting topic, but it's an important topic. So I'm going to try to be pretty to the point here and keep it high energy as we go. I want to talk about financial risk today because I've been having a lot of conversations with couples in various life stages with different things going on about this. And I find that financial risk is a topic that a lot of people have a hard time thinking through conceptually in terms of like figuring out what to do with it, right? How do we think about financial risk in a way where we're not just being paralyzed with indecision, but we're actually working forward? And frankly, I don't think my industry does a very good job of this because when, you know, if you Google financial advisor risk or financial planner risk, I haven't done this, so don't quote me on this if this is wrong. But what I would imagine you'd find if you were to do that is a bunch of people talking about risk tolerance and like questionnaires to fill out that help you figure out how you should be investing your money, if you should be investing in 100% stocks or 100% bonds or somewhere in between, right? Like that's what we as an industry tend to talk about with when it comes to evaluating financial risk. And that's a part of it, certainly, right? That's a real thing we need to talk about, and we will. But making risk decisions to me is a little bit more complicated than that. Frankly, I think a lot of those risk tolerance questionnaires are pretty god-awful, right? That they're not particularly useful. We need to do them as an industry for compliance reasons, but I've never met anybody who had their life changed or entire investment philosophy changed by filling out a risk tolerance questionnaire. I have had people who have had their financial mindsets changed by the way we're going to talk about risk today, though. And so in terms of thinking through financial risk, right, the first thing we need to look at, right, before we evaluate any other kind of financial risk is the financial foundation of your family secure, right? Because we can't get to investing risk if we don't have the basics set up first and foremost, right? What do I mean by that? Do we have an emergency fund in place, right? If one of you was to lose a job, how would you pay your bills next month? We need to have an answer in place for how that happens, right? And usually that comes in the form of an emergency fund, right? We shouldn't be talking about investment risk and what to do in the stock market until we have that in place, right? 3 to 6 months of expenses. If you're a two-income household, you can probably get away with having about 3 months of expenses saved up. If you're a one-income household, or one of you makes a lot more money than the other, somewhere in the six-month range is appropriate. And for couples, right, that's a joint number, right? So I look at that. You can have it in separate accounts, I suppose, but right, just having one joint family emergency fund goal, right, is important for that. That's the first thing. Second thing is, what's the insurance setup for your family look like, right? Are there any changes that we need to make there, right? The best bulletproof investing plan in the world doesn't mean much if we don't have health insurance in place. And if you were to get sick, you're going to be on the hook for tens of thousands of dollars of medical bills. Or if you have a child, right, you end up owing a lot more to deliver the baby. Life insurance and disability insurance are things that are important, right? They're nobody's favorite topic to talk about, including mine, frankly. But making sure that we have the coverage in place that we need for those things is an important part, right? And then certainly, right, any other type of insurance that you would need if you have a car, right, car insurance, and making sure those levels of coverage are appropriate. If you are renting, having renter's insurance with a replacement value of your property that is accurate and up to date is really important. I find that people just get renter's insurance policies to check the box, but don't actually look at how much it covers. So, you know, that would be something to look into. same thing with homeowners insurance, right? If you're a homeowner, right, making sure that the replacement value of the policy keeps up to date with how much it would cost to actually replace your house. You want to make sure you have that plan in place. And then finally, the biggest risk I see couples take, frankly, that they don't need to, is not having any sort of estate plan in place, right? Do you have a will, right? Or do you have a trust-based estate plan? If you have kids, do you have a guardian named, right? Like that to me is the biggest one that makes me worried advising clients, is if I spend years sometimes talking with clients about investing strategies and getting all these accounts in place and doing all this sophisticated tax stuff, and we don't have a guardian in place for a kid. That's not good, right? So making sure from a risk management standpoint, right, you have that stable financial foundation built first, right? Do we have an emergency fund? Do we have the insurance coverage we need? Do we have, even if it's just a basic estate plan in place, and is it up to date? That's thing number one. From there, right, we then look at how we are going to allocate money going forward. And this is where, right, investing risk and, right, making sure we're diversifying, right, all of that stuff holds here. One thing that I find sometimes gets overlooked in terms of the way I think we naturally just kind of think about investing risk, and certainly in the way we talk about it as an industry, if you're under 50, I'll put a blanket number on it, the biggest financial risk that you face in your lifetime, in my opinion — this is my opinion only, right, so form your own opinion — has nothing to do with the stock market and what the stock market does. It has everything to do with inflation, right? How much more expensive stuff is going to be 30, 40, 50 years from now than it is today, right? And that has nothing to do with the inflation, by the way, of the past 12 to 18 months, right? That I think got in a lot of people's minds in a way that it made it a little bit more tangible in ways that I hadn't seen in the prior years when I've had these conversations with clients. But like, I'm just talking long-term inflation, right? How gasoline for your car was 10 cents or per gallon or whatever it was for our grandparents, and now it's a lot more than that. I won't name specific numbers because it varies obviously from month to month, but the way stuff gets more expensive over time, right? And if that continues, as it likely will for the next several decades, right, we need to have a plan in place that you are going to outpace inflation with the money that you are saving for the long term specifically. And so with that in mind, right, if we're investing for the long term, from my perspective, we need to be taking some investment risk, right, to give you the highest possible chance to exceed inflation, right? Now, if you're getting closer to retirement, right, if you're getting to the point where we're getting ready to start taking money out of your accounts to live off of, that's where I start to worry more about what happens in the stock market, because the short-term fluctuations really do matter for people who are kind of in that range right before or after they retire. But for younger couples, who is most of my audience here, inflation is the biggest risk I'm worried about here. And that almost by necessity involves taking some investment risk, right? It's just part of the game. Tends to average out in the long run, right? And if you're investing your money for a long time, then the odds are pretty good that you're going to outpace inflation if you have a good investment strategy in place. Doesn't need to be a complicated investment strategy, but just a good investment strategy in place. In the short term, though, not so much. And so I guess we'll wrap up with talking through, like, when it actually comes to setting up an investment portfolio, what are the three things that I look at to help clients figure out the right mix of investments for them? Frankly, we've touched on some of them already, so some of this is going to be new and some of it won't. First thing that we look at is your timeline, as we just talked about, right? All else equal, if you were investing for a longer amount of time, we're going to take more investment risk for the reasons we just talked about, right? Nothing new there. But where that's particularly relevant is, like, once we get to the point where we're only setting aside money for a goal for a couple years, the risks of investing in the stock market, to me, start to outweigh the potential returns. Because over a year or two time frame, anything can happen in the stock market, right? You know, over long time periods, if you're investing well, in a diversified way, your account should go up. But in the short term, right, all bets are off, which is why you see the market go up and down on a day-to-day basis. And so one of the things we look at in terms of figuring out whether we should be investing money for you, how much we should be investing, what type of investments to choose, is your timeline. Longer term accounts are going to be invested more aggressively than shorter term accounts. Second thing is your comfort level with risk, right? And this is what gets us back to those risk questionnaires that we like to do as a financial planning industry. If your account was to drop 30% in the next 6 months, is that something that you would be unhappy about? Probably. I mean, who wouldn't? But if you logged into your account and saw that it was down 30% in the past 6 months, right, would you say, oh, that stinks, and maybe ask, like, make sure that you're doing what you need to do and then go about your day? Or is that something that's going to wake you up at 3 a.m, right? How much does it bother you seeing your account fluctuate? If it bothers you a lot, we're going to be a little bit more conservative with the way we make some of those decisions. If you actively like taking financial risk, which is not common, but I see it from time to time, we might feel more comfortable dialing that risk up a little bit. And if you're somewhere in between, we would find something a little bit more moderate, though, again, weighted to the timeline that we're looking at right here, right? If you really, really don't like seeing your accounts drop in value, but you're investing for a 50-year time frame, we're going to spend most of our time talking through how to get comfortable with the idea that your accounts might drop on a day-to-day basis, because again, the risk from my perspective is inflation there, right? We need to be investing pretty aggressively, maybe not as aggressively as some other people might, but we need to probably be investing a little bit more than you feel comfortable with for the long term specifically. Again, short term is completely different. If you have a really conservative risk tolerance, if you don't like taking financial risks and we're only saving money for a couple of years, like, definitely just keep it in cash, put it in a high yield savings account. Those situations are pretty straightforward. And then the third piece is the one that I actually think, like, can trip some people up, and that is your risk capacity. Can you afford to take risk? I had a client a few years ago. I'm going to change the cities around here, right? But they had been saving up to, let's say, buy a house in Manhattan, and ended up relocating to Omaha, Nebraska for work. And obviously, right, the, you know, in terms of cost of living in downtown New York City versus Omaha, Nebraska, cost of living is a little different there. And so the house prices they were looking at were dramatically different from place to place. And the question is, like, what do we do with our down payment money? And they had saved up to the point where they could put a down payment down on a New York house. They ended up, like, putting a huge, huge down payment down in Nebraska. But, you know, the idea being, like, when they went to make the down payment in Nebraska, had we known that was what they were doing, had they had that much money set aside, right? Normally, for when you're saving for a down payment, if it's a year or two out, we wouldn't really be investing that at all because the timeline is short, as we talked about. But they had oversaved the down payment that they needed so much that they could afford to take financial risk, right? In other words, even if they kept their all their down payment money invested, because they had pretty high risk tolerances, right, and the market dropped, like, the magnitude difference there was such that even if the market dropped 40%, they could still make the down payment that they needed. That doesn't mean they should invest everything, but it means they had a little bit more wiggle room, right? That's another factor that I look at, right? In the same way that, to go to another more extreme example, a 95-year-old widow who has $3 million saved up in the bank might be willing to take a little bit more financial risk than somebody who's in that same age, same life situation, who has $50,000 in the bank, right? Because you might not need to take as much risk if you have a big nest egg like that, but you can afford it because even if it drops, you're still going to be okay, right? I don't always see that be the kind of deciding factor for people, but it is something that is relevant in a lot of different scenarios. This idea of risk capacity, right? How much risk can you afford to take, or how much risk do you need to take, right, in order to achieve your goals, and what are the trade-offs that come with that, right? Long story short, right, there's a lot of different components to this idea of financial risk, right? From having the financial foundation for your family built to understanding what the types of financial risks are. And it's not just about the stock market. Like I said, I think in the long term, inflation is a really, really big financial risk that we tend to downplay. And then how to actually make investing decisions, balancing all those things, right? Your timeline, your risk capacity, and just how comfortable you are taking risk, right? There's no right or wrong answer for these things. Other than like not having a will and not having a health insurance, like those are good things to have in place. But hopefully this gets you thinking at least a little bit, because I have found, you know, every now and then I see trends with the conversations I'm having with couples, and I find that couples seem to be getting tripped up around risk and thinking through it these days. So hopefully you find this helpful. Let me know what you think of this episode, and we will see you next week. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Money and Marriage Podcast. If you want to learn more, you can access my favorite money exercise for free if you head to paysetterplanning.com/moneyandmarriage. Again, that's paysetterplanning.com/moneyandmarriage. Get your access today, and I'll see you next time.